transmitting live from the heart of Times Square on 99.5 FM, WBAI New York, Pacifica Radio for the Tri-State Area. This is Trump Watch, a weekly series investigating the actions of and reactions to President Donald J. Trump and his administration. I'm your host, Jesse Lent.
If you look at the number of people that have been killed in gun-related crimes in the United States since 9/11, it's something like 200,000. And it's so, you know, there are countries in the world that have populations smaller than that. Whereas if you look at the number of terrorist incidents carried out by Muslims, it's, you know, it's a few dozen. Similar number for the far right, a few dozen people killed. So why do we focus so much attention on the Muslim incidents? Well, you know, it tells us that how we think about violence is socially and politically constructed. It's not a simple reflection of the reality of the risks and dangers we face. Any one of us living in the United States, you know, the most likely person to kill us is actually our domestic partner, particularly if you're a woman. But we don't think of that as our biggest threat. You know, we it's much more convenient to think it's these people coming from a different culture, you know, it's this barbaric culture. And when we think of Islam in that way, it enables us to tell ourselves a very convenient story about ourselves, right? We can tell ourselves that we're everything that they're not.
That was Arun Kudnani, author of The Muslims Are Coming, Islamophobia, Extremism, and the Domestic War on Terror, speaking on the very first Trump Watch with Jesse Lent back on December 7th, 2016. Tonight will be the last episode of this show. But fear not, regular listeners, I will be back on the airwaves in November with a new series on WBAI covering the upcoming presidential election called Focus on 2020. So stay tuned for more on that. Tonight marks the 18th anniversary of 9/11, of course. So I want to start tonight's show, and in fact, devote our entire show tonight, to opening up the phones and hearing your thoughts on the way that Donald Trump has changed the peace movement that sprung up following the military actions in Iraq and Afghanistan that followed the dark days of September 11th, 2001. I'm sure that if you've been by a TV or a radio today, you've heard a lot of remembrances, which are incredibly important, and I would never dream of downplaying them. However, tonight we want to focus on the peace movement that came after 9/11, and if all of the fronts on which you have been active are exhausting you and making it more difficult to fight for peace in the Trump era. Is this the case, or has it sparked a new generation of peace activists? Give us a call, 212-209-2877. With a president apparently hell-bent on undoing decades of progressive achievements on everything from climate change to immigration to civil rights, has the energy for the peace movement waned, or is it stronger than ever? And while we're waiting for the board to light up, we're going to listen back to a few minutes of my interview in November of 2017 with Alec Baldwin about how he was picked to play President Trump on SNL and how he compares to some of Baldwin's other iconic roles. Let's go back to when you were first asked to play Donald Trump on Saturday Night Live by creator and producer Lorne Michaels. As you've described numerous times, Tina Fey urged him to cast you. Why do you think Tina felt so strongly that you should play Trump?
I have no idea. Maybe she felt that there was parts of my personality that were like Trump. I mean, you never know with Tina. You're always going to get that mean girl's treatment. You know what I mean? Maybe she was trying to give me a subtle dig. You never know. But I did hear that. I never heard that from Tina that I can remember, but I do remember Lauren calling me and saying that he and Tina had cooked up this idea. But listen, Daryl Hammond was on the show for years and was a very wonderful Trump impersonator. And the only thing I can think of is that Daryl is so kind and so sweet, and his Trump impersonation was so kind of velvety, and that's before Trump became president. I think once Trump became president, we had to kind of amp up the danger of Trump and the threat that Trump poses. So once Trump was running for office, and although we were all convinced he wouldn't win, once he won, this kind of guest gig I had for a couple of episodes turned into this semi-full-time thing, because I think what I try to bring out is the malice of Trump and the discontent of Trump and the bitterness. You know, when I play Trump, I try to make him the bitterest man in the world.
Do you see any similarities between your depiction of Donald Trump and other high-powered businessmen you've played, like Jack Donaghy from 30 Rock or Blake in Glengarry Glen Ross?
I think that I don't, because Blake is a cipher. You know, Mamet told me that he said the problem for him with the play, even though he had already won the Pulitzer Prize for the play, that the problem with the play was that he thought that these men were not criminals, and therefore there was an insufficient provocation for them to commit a crime. He said, I want you to come into the room and really scare the hell out of them so they will leave that room and they will commit a crime. And so, that was that situation with the Jack Donaghy role. Donaghy was somebody who, I think he was very happy, you know, when his work life went well and everyone was performing the way he wanted them to perform, when he could bring his kind of Robert McNamara quantitative approach to comedy television, he was happy with that. And, then he ran off and, you know, he was a rich guy who wanted to live like a rich single guy and, you know, womanize and go to fancy restaurants and see the world and have a good time. And Trump is the opposite. Trump is like Mr. Potter in It's a Wonderful Life. You know, he's just the most miserable bastard that ever lived. So we just try to keep it right there. If we keep it right there, we're good.
We're back. You're listening to the final episode of Trump Watch with Jesse Lent on WBAI. That was one of our favorite interviews, my interview back in November of 2017 with Alec Baldwin on playing Trump on SNL. We're also taking your calls tonight at 212-209-2877 about how President Trump has changed the peace movement that grew out of 9/11. We're going to go to a couple of those callers now. Caller, are you there? Hello.
Hello.
Hi.
Yeah, hello. Can you hear me?
Yes, you're on WBAI.
Yeah, how you doing? My name is Ed. WBAI member calling from Queens.
Great.
In aspect of how Trump has affected the peace movement coming out of 9/11.
Ed, you're fading in and out a bit. Can you speak up maybe a little bit?
Can you hear me better now?
Yeah, that's perfect.
Yeah, how you doing? In reference to your question, as far as how Trump has affected the peace movement, I really think he's become too much of a focus. I mean, I really think with all of his outlandish behavior that borders on insanity, I think he's taken away from the greater picture as far as how this United States foreign policy has affected a lot of the stuff we're going through now, as far as with the immigration, as far as with America's standing in the world. I think he's not the root cause of it, even though I agree, yes, he needs to be confronted, but we need to get back to the bigger picture. How this country's foreign policy has made a lot of the problems that exist in the world, the Middle East, South America, how years, decades of foreign policy have affected those areas and caused the problems that we're dealing with now. I think he takes the focus off a lot of stuff. We concentrate on his lunacy, and we miss the bigger picture.
Ed, thank you so much for calling. We're going to go to our next caller now. You're on WBAI. Hi.
Yes, hi. My name's Dave. I was wondering, isn't, in a strange way, ironic way, Trump the best friend of the peace movement because he's a coward. He's trying to get out of Afghanistan. He fired Bolton, which was a criminal and a warmonger, and he's afraid to launch a war. He will not launch a war because he's a coward, and I think we should be thankful that we have a coward in chief that is frightened of his own shadow.
And of course, Iran, who anyone who's followed this show or followed the news knows that there have been some very contentious interactions with the U.S., the issue of a military, a drone without a person in it shot down, and the issue on the coast. Iran sort of sent a sort of vague message that the U.S. should avoid warmongers after Bolton's firing, sort of signaling that, yeah, they approve of this move. You know, this is one really important aspect of this discussion. I'd be curious to get your thoughts on this. I mean, do you think that, you know, there's kind of two ways, as with most things with Trump, you could look at this. Do you think that Donald Trump has actually been, as you say, a friend to the peace movement?
Yes.
As hard as that.
I can prove it to you.
Okay.
On YouTube, there was a documentary, I don't know if it's still there, about his decision-making techniques regarding a power and the color, whether it should be gold or black. And he's finally convinced that it should be black. And it's interesting the way he actually goes and asks people and makes a decision. And it shows to me that I believe that if Hillary was in power, Israel would launch an attack on Iran. She was very vicious and very aggressive. This guy's a coward. He plays chicken until the end, launched, we're going to attack, and then he calls it back. He's afraid of his own shadow. He's fearful of war. He never served. He chickened out of Vietnam service, you know, even the National Guard. So we have...
Although this is clearly a president who enjoys saber rattling and making some very grandiose statements.
But that's in his negotiation technique. It's scare, scare, scare. And when the person doesn't budge, he backtracks. And he's been doing that all along. Israel, if Hillary was president,
all right, well, let's not go down the if Hillary was president hole. But, you know, it is a really good point. I mean, President Trump, just speaking today about, as many viewers probably know, there was going to be a deal between the U.S. and the Taliban in Afghanistan. President Trump was going to bring them, many of these Taliban leaders, to Camp David for a negotiation last weekend that he ended up blowing up and reporting on Twitter that even though this negotiation wasn't public yet, he announced it and announced that it had fallen apart. And one of the points that Trump made just today at the White House was that if terrorism like that perpetrated by the Taliban recently that blew up those negotiations, excuse the bad pun, if that should happen, the U.S., and I'm paraphrasing here, but he said they would be met with a force unlike the world has ever seen, unlike anything from the U.S., even beyond nuclear weapons. So I'm not sure what weapons are beyond nuclear weapons, but that is what our president was promising today. So let's go to another call. We've got a bunch of calls coming in. I'm loving to hear your voices right now. Again, the number's 212-209-2877. We're talking about how President Trump has affected the peace movement. Caller, are you there? You're on WBAI. Hi.
Yes, good evening. I don't think we have a peace movement, personally. I think what has happened is the war that we have has been technologized, and we've bought pretty much into the trope of a war on terror. And once we bought into that trope, there's almost anything that can happen and goes beyond. That's why Donald Trump could say the things that he's saying. We, as Americans and as a globalized West, have bought into the trope of a war on terror. And if we don't analyze it and see what it really is, it's about the ruling class taking from the people they've always already taken from. And they've given Americans an excuse that we can fall behind to exercise our xenophobia and exercise all of the things that we've been trained to exercise. Donald Trump has unleashed part of the darkest psyche in America. And that's what has happened. That's what we're dealing with. Even this discussion about a war on terror, okay, is part of that trope. I just want to leave that with the audience.
You know, that's a really interesting point. The caller just said the war has been technologized. I often think about the drones, the people who go to offices in D.C. or elsewhere and drop bombs on people without having any connection. Another aspect of this debate, of course, is conscription. If there was a draft, as there was in Vietnam, would there be a more active movement to stop the war in Afghanistan. I mean, this deal that fell apart with the Taliban, it was news for a minute, and then it dropped off the pages, as so many stories do, dropped off the front pages. So where are we at, and what are we fighting, if by we you mean anyone who's a member of the peace movement? Let's go to the next caller. Are you there?
Hi.
Hi,
good evening. You know, in the beginning of the Trump show, so to speak, Washington was complaining.
Not this show, but the actual Donald Trump being president show.
Yeah, the Trump show. That's what it is. It's the Trump show. It's an ego thing with him. And the government said he's not paying attention. He's not following the protocol. Of course not. He's not an idiot. He's highly intelligent. As a matter of fact, he's a Gemini. That accounts for his split. Let's put the bricks there. No, we won't put the bricks there. So this is the Trump show. He's wearing it like a badge. He's not a president, and he's bad for the country. But the bottom line, I think, is he represents a certain percentage of people who allowed him. He didn't buy his way in. He manipulated it, and people bought it, and now they're in the show.
And so, what about this idea of Donald Trump overwhelming a movement for peace? You know, we've been kind of kicking it around this evening, but there really is a dichotomy that the first caller got at, where, okay, on one end, we haven't gotten into any wars. There have been no new conflicts started under Donald Trump. But by the other measurement, which is sort of how engaged the peace movement is, there are a million other movements that people have to, well, if you believe in a woman's right to choose, if you believe in protecting endangered species or endangered habitats or refugees' rights to come to America, take your pick. Has that diluted it? Do you have any thought about which one of those seems more true?
I think that it's a show, and that thing with Korea, the thing with the rest of the country, the rest of the world, it's whoever's not so much got the biggest gun, but puts up the, and then all of a sudden, all right, well, they're coming to the table, and we're going to meet, and blah, blah. But I don't think anybody, unless they're insane, really wants to kill people and explode weapons and do whatever. It all became a kind of a political thing. So he didn't really put him down, and they got together with their haircuts, both of them, and they put on a show. And now he's on the map, so to speak. And then the other country said, it's all a game. It's only when they start pulling the trigger. But now, see, what I'm really worried about, and nobody kind of really talks about it, is this drone thing. They don't need you. One person can run a war. The world is changing, and Trump represents that change. He tweets, he twitters. Roosevelt never tweeted. He didn't. It wasn't even tweeting then.
Well, in Trump's defense, yes, that technology was a good 60 years away, but true. Well, thank you so much for calling. I want to listen to one last clip from the Trump Watch archives now. This is from my interview from January 30th of this year with Anu Joshi, Senior Director of Immigrant Rights Policy at the New York Immigration Coalition. This interview was recorded back when the federal government was in the midst of what became the longest government shutdown in history at 34 days, in what was widely perceived as a failed attempt for President Trump to pressure Democratic lawmakers into approving funding for a border wall between the U.S. and Canada, the president's signature campaign issue. At the heart of President Trump's battle with the Democrats that led to the shutdown is, as probably every American knows by now, Donald Trump's campaign promised that he would build a wall on the southern border. What does the wall signify to you, and how important is it whether it gets built or not?
Well, you know, I should first point out that the second part of his campaign promise was that Mexico would pay for it.
That's an important point.
Yes. But I think, you know, it's important to understand the historical context. So in the last 15 years, we have spent over $200 billion on border security in this country. We currently spend more on immigration enforcement than every other federal law enforcement agency combined. So that's Secret Service, that's FBI, that's DEA combined. We spend more on immigration enforcement. So, you know, it's important to remember that we as a country, rightfully or not, made a commitment and have been funding that commitment for decades. So that's one. Two, I think, you know, the wall has become a symbol to many on the far right in the anti-immigrant extremist parts of this president's base. But it does have far-reaching implications, both morally, where we're spending our money. If we're spending money on a wall, we're not investing in infrastructure, we're not investing in healthcare, we're not investing in kids, we're not investing in any of those things. And to what it says to our immigrant communities, both on our side of the wall and on the southern side of the wall. I think, you know, the wall is a symbol, but it also has severe impacts. And the third thing is that in order to build this wall, you have to steal land from private landowners. You have to, the president is asking to go around environmental protections. There's a butterfly reserve that crosses the border in Texas that would be destroyed if the president got his way. Land that belongs to business owners would be seized. The lawsuits that would happen would drag out, but in the end, everyday Americans would lose out. So it's not just a symbol.
You're listening to the final episode of Trump Watch on WBAI. My name is Jesse Lent. We're taking your calls about how President Trump has changed the peace movement. We've just got a few minutes left, so let's try to sneak a couple more callers in. Caller, hello, are you there?
Here?
Yes. Hi.
Hi, it's Russell up in White Plains. You know, the last caller said, who wants to kill people? Let me quote somebody. We came, we saw, he died. That was Hillary Clinton. She was a murderer, and I'm glad I didn't vote for her. But, you know, Trump is a criminal, but at this point, he's the leader of the peace movement. I don't know how old you are, Jesse, but in 2003, the peace movement was overwhelmed. It was led by the Quisling, Leslie Kagan, who went along with Mayor Bloomberg, who demanded, oh, you can't go on the grass on Central Park because that must be respected. And so a million people who turned out in February 2003 were fractured into pieces, and the police were able to manhandle us. So, you know, you look at the way Obama treated Cindy Sheehan, and you listen to clowns on MSNBC and CNN crying for Bolton and Syria and Libya. Wake up, Jesse. Trump is the leader of the peace movement. Thank you very much, Jesse.
Thank you so much for your call. And to answer your question, I'm 42. I was actually in New York for 9/11 and the days after that were by turns devastating and deeply moving, as New Yorkers famously looked out for each other, as we've been known to do in some of the more dangerous moments the city's experienced. A couple of images that jump into my mind are the missing posters that seem to be on every corner of the city below 14th Street of people that you knew probably didn't make it out. But I also remember another image, one I saw on T-shirts and bumper stickers, a rallying cry for the anti-war movement. Our grief is not a cry for war. It may not have been, but the wars went on nonetheless. President Trump, for his part, has not started any wars yet, as we know. But is that really the issue now, when you consider all of the other ways that activists are clamoring to fight his agenda? We got time for one more caller. Caller, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Hi. You're on WBAI.
Gosh, I'm David. I here we go. I don't want to be the last caller ever on your show. It's terrific. No, really. And I'm an older guy. I'm a retired city school teacher. And great program, but
thank you so much.
The famous Quickly, and I'll get off the air and keep the show going somewhere, somehow, podcast, okay?
Well, actually, but tune in November. I will be hosting WBAI's 2020 show called, Focus on 2020, on the upcoming election.
Okay, yeah. I just want to make a quick quip, is that there was an historian once in England, his name was Nicholson, Harold Nicholson, and he was the head of MI6, but he was also an Oxford historian. What she said about history is it's a kaleidoscope, meaning all these things can be set in certain ways, but it's not certainly a linear consequence. So, like you've alluded to and been polite and professional about, is it's, we're living in strange times, and who knows what's going to happen. But I'm going to get off and keep going, and great show.
Thank you so much. You might not have wanted to be the last caller of Trump Watch, but I can't think of a better caller. And thank you to all of our callers, to everyone who called tonight. And that is a wrap on Trump Watch with Jesse Lentz. It's been one of the great pleasures of my life talking to all the amazing guests and speaking to all of you who called throughout the 128-episode run. It was a rare privilege to be able to see something in an article that I found interesting and then be able to share it with all of you by speaking to the reporter behind it or the activist making that news. A big thanks to Reggie Johnson, who engineered nearly every episode of this show and was always ready with helpful feedback. I would argue an uncredited producer on Trump Watch. And a sincere thanks to anyone who tuned in during our nearly three-year run. You can hear the entire 128-episode series, Trump Watch with Jesse Lent, at soundcloud.com/TrumpWatchWBAI or wherever you get your podcasts. I hope you'll join me again in November when I'll be back on WBAI with a new show on the upcoming election entitled Focus on 2020. Until then, I'm your host, Jesse Lent. Thanks for listening. I want to hear it. I don't have the fear. Just like way back in the days of old, how magnificently we will fold into the mystic.